Chapter 9. Caldera, the Askir Rift. Vulcan rushed the gate of the command nexus. He held the great hammer, Doom Tremor, high over his head. Alarms whooped with savage, rusted voices as he approached. The immense cone shimmered, its shape flickering and distorting as its protective force field pulsed and surged. Within the field, before the gate, a line of orcs in heavy armor raised chain axes. They braced for combat, but their jaws were open in mocking laughter. They did not expect a lone human to pass through the field. Vulcan hit the invisible barrier with all his velocity, all his mass, and all the strength of his hammer. The orcs learned that energy itself could scream. The force field flashed white. The shriek of 100 tortured generators pierced the air. Vulcan raised Doom Tremor with both hands, then brought it down again before the glare had faded. The shield howled red, then violet. The orcs at the gate covered their eyes, dazzled by the brutality of light. Vulcan was relentless. With each blow of the hammer, the earth shook. Thunder cracked reality into hard, broken edges. The shockwave radiated across the installation. Conduits crumpled at its passage. They burst, spewing geysers of fire. Boom, boom, boom. The beat of judgment, of the end of feral empires. Vulcan swung, channeling all his fury. He swung, and he was the anger of Caldera. His cloak billowed in the hurricane of his creation. He swung, and half a kilometre away, the tremors unleashed by his wrath felled a chimney. The tower swayed. At its base, stone crumbled and iron snapped. The chimney came down, dropping vertically and then forward, crushing generators below it. The night exploded with unleashed coruscating energy. Lava flowed from the shattered base, spreading across the canyon floor. A dull orange-red glow lit the sides of surrounding structures. The damage spread, but the Nexus resisted. The power in the installation did not falter. Vulcan had not expected it would. Orc construction piled excess upon redundancy. It would take an even greater cataclysm than this to destroy the great machine. Control was what he would wrest from the hands of the orcs. Strike, strike, strike. A terrible accumulation, the rhythm unbreakable as the laws of the universe. At the edge of his vision, Vulcan saw orcs rushing at him. The greater part of the defenders were at the wall, dealing with Koran's incursion. Perhaps now they had realized they had been diverted. Perhaps they would turn from that battle and head back towards the center of the complex. They would be too late to disrupt his attack. Those who remained were too few to make a difference. They were not even a distraction. The shock waves knocked them back. The tremors hurled them to the ground. Doom Tremor flashed, its rage the extension of Vulcan's soul, and it shattered the force field. A prismatic explosion surrounded the Nexus. The gigantic arms jerked, their energy arcs rising to the clouds in their agony. A cluster of explosions opened a rent along the top third of the cone. The night became a howling strobe of light and dark. The installation roared. An invader had breached its defenses. A great danger had come. Vulcan had come. He strode forward. Each step was grounded. He felt the heart of Caldera reach up through his feet, through his body. The world embraced its avenger. The orcs charged. They were as tall as Vulcan and even more massive in their armor. "This world is under my protection," he snarled. "Trouble it no more." He swung the hammer sideways. One blow was enough. Armor shattered like eggshells. Bodies burst and burned. Behind him, howls of distress and anger from more defenders, too few and too late. The chorus of alarm engulfed the complex. It was the fanfare of Xenos' defeat. The Primarch stood before the gate. He slammed the hammer against its center. The iron slab, 10 meters high, flew apart. Vulcan entered the Nexus. It was composed of a single vast space, a cathedral of riotous technology. Banks of coils the size of plasma drives rose toward the inner peak. Energy arced between them, creating a crackling web intense enough to fry half a continent. Huge cables from the exterior fueled the banks with still more energy, while conduits fed the heat of Caldera's mantle to the machine. At the center of the cone was a pillar, half the height of the structure and 50 meters wide. It supported the control mechanisms. Scores of orcs moved back and forth between monumental levers and dials. A huge greenskin engineer stood above them all on a dais, surrounded by a tangle of sparking machinery. There, Vulcan thought, was the heart of Caldera's martyrdom. That was what he had come to destroy. He took in the disposition of the Nexus and his target in a fraction of a second. The orc engineer evaluated him in the same moment. Vulcan took a step forward, and the inner defenses activated. The turrets had a precision Vulcan had never encountered in orcs before. The need to preserve the control nexus governed their function. They caused no damage to the machinery. There were dozens of them, and they all fired on the Primarch. If their rotation brought the precious mechanisms within their line of fire, they fell silent until their guns had a clear bead on the Primarch once more. They hit him with a torrent of energy beams. The concentrated strength of a gas giant's thunderstorm exploded against his chest. It forced him to take a full step back. He planted his legs and leaned into the attack. His breastplate began to glow. Lightning surrounded him as he moved forward against power that would have incinerated a Lehman Russ. One step, then another. He held Doom Tremor before him. It absorbed many of the hits, its head flaring and sending the excess energy outward. Vulcan directed it at the engineer. The orc's personal force field flashed in turn. The beast raged as the onslaught did no more than slow the Primarch. Vulcan advanced. His armor's interior temperature rocketed upwards. He was inside an active volcano. A mortal's flesh would have started to burn. He marched on, implacable. A continental plate on the move. He passed between the immense coils. He was midway towards the pillar. He realized the orc engineer was not shouting. It was laughing. The beast pulled a lever. The weight of a planet fell on his shoulders. He withstood the crushing force for several seconds, and then it brought him to his knees. The orc had turned the gravity weapon against him. The greenskin hurled mountains at the sky, and now it forced Vulcan down. His lungs flattened. Drawing a breath was an act of supreme strength. He growled, denying the force that sought to grind his bones to dust. He would not capitulate. He would rise. He would advance. A power that had destroyed worlds held him fast. Then it reversed. He flew upward. The invisible hand whipped him against the slanted wall near the top of the cone, and the impact dented the metal beneath him. Unseen mountain walls came together with him in between. His arms were flat against the surface. He strained to bring them forward. It was all he could do to keep his grip on Doom Tremor. The orc laughed again, adjusted the controls, and slammed Vulcan to the floor, a meteor slaved to the greenskin's will. Before Vulcan could get his bearings, he was flying once more. The battering and speed blurred his senses. Whether he was smashed against the wall or the floor, the crushing never relented. It grew stronger. He felt the crack of bones. He was trapped in the fist of Caldera, the planet's own strength, turned against its will to destroy its defender. The command nexus was visible from the wall. The structure was kilometers away, but its bulk loomed over everything around it. Now it flashed and pulsed. It cried out under the Primarch's assault. The orcs reacted to its agony. They paused in their struggle to reach the breached defenses. Corlan's force kept up their bolter fire, killing dozens more in the moment of the pause. The orcs milled about in momentary confusion, then began to retreat down the slope. They turned their back on the last wall.
"They realize we are a diversion,"
Aloysian boxed. "Then we must be more than that," Corland answered, speaking to the full squads. "The Primarch must complete his mission. Ours is to keep the orcs away from the Nexus. We must be the threat they cannot ignore. Stop them, brothers, at any cost." With a roar, the last wall charged from the tunnels. The Thunderhawks and Storm Eagle flew low down the rise, cannons and missiles hitting deep into the Ork ranks, angling in for runs at the tanks. The two squads of veterans ploughed into the enemy rearguard.
"Forward!" Corlin shouted. "We are the Gladius! Stab it into the heart of the foe!"
Bolter fire annihilated the flesh ahead of him. The squad formation was narrow, two warriors abreast, sending punishing fire out on all sides. They were running downhill with the urgency of desperate rage. The greenskins fell like chaff in the wind, before them and to either side. For a few more seconds, the orcs tried to ignore the space marines, but too many were dying. Their speed was hampered by their numbers. The last wall moved faster by killing obstacles. Corlin's double gladius strike sank deeper and deeper into the horde. The orcs began to turn again. The wound was too deep for them to ignore. The green tide sought to close over the heads of the space marines. Corlin slowed to a stop. With bolter and chainsword, he killed his way through muscle and iron. His foes lost distinction. It was as if he fought a single orc, killing it endlessly. He fought according to the needs of each second. Block a descending axe with his blade. Shoot the brute through the chest. Turn and blast another through the head as it tried to flank him. Absorb the blow on his right. Retaliate with chainsword grinding through chest and heart. The rage of the orcs grew. Perhaps their desperation, too. The infantry close in began to drop, killed by the gunfire of the ranks behind. A hail of heavy-caliber bullets pounded the squads. A rocket struck the ground a few metres to the right. It was almost a direct hit on Absolution. The blast shattered his helm, and he staggered, his face badly burned. Eternity supported him, and he kept fighting.
"Brothers," Corlin called, "we fight for a greater purpose and a greater victory. Hold the foe, and the Primarch will save Caldera. Salvation here means salvation for Terra, and that is a victory beyond sacrifice."
As he spoke, he felt the truth was speaking through him. Sacrifice was a given in the existence of the Adeptus Astartes. It was the inevitable end of duty. There was no regret in such an end, but there was in meaningless sacrifice. That was no small part of the shadow of Adamantua. The Imperial fists had been thrown away. Their annihilation had served no purpose beyond the amusement of the beast. So he had thought. He saw a different truth now, one whose reality was not assured, but he would willingly die to make it a certainty. He saw a chain leading from Adamantua, the disaster becoming the means of uniting the successors, the lesson he learned there fueling his determination to call the other chapters to Terra. Link after link of steel purpose leading to this moment on Caldera. If he fell now but Vulcan succeeded, the defense of the Imperium would be taken up by the legend it needed. If his sacrifice led to the purge of the orcs from Ulanor, that would be a reason to rejoice.
"Fight for Vulcan," Corlin exhorted. "His victory will be the Imperium's salvation."
He stormed into the orc fire, slamming into the body of the horde again. He smashed a foot soldier to the ground, crushed its skull with his boots, and decapitated the next orc beyond. And then, coming up the slope, he saw a trio of hulking shapes. They were boxy, clanking monstrosities, bristling with weapons and mechanical arms. They were grotesque Xenos mockeries of dreadnoughts. And they had come to accept Corlin's sacrifice. The Adeptus Mechanicus forces split off to the east and west at the volcanic gateway to the Askia Rift. They escorted heavy, treaded transports. Arawa had mobilized them from the spaceport as soon as Corlin had reported on the installation. The Fist's Exemplar and the combined regiments of the Astra Militarum pursued the orcs through the gap between the mountains. Thane called a halt at the top of the descent into the rift. Below, the vastness of the orc horde poured into the valley. Kilometers in the distance, flashes of tortured energy marked the nexus. The orcs were rushing for the vulnerable center of their machine, the center they must attack, but not destroy. In their rush to bring down the intruders, they demolished their own defensive wall. Past that barrier, though, they were forced into more cautious maneuvers. The super-heavy vehicles had slowed to a stop as they reached the first of the conduits. The battle fortresses moved slowly through the narrow avenues of the facility. The giant walkers, too wide to pass without uprooting the clusters of pipes or crushing the walls of power plants, halted at the edge. They turned around to guard the approach into the rift, becoming the new line of defense. Beyond them, the smaller vehicles and infantry swarmed forward. The entirety of the Orc army had entered the Askia Rift. The war hinged on a moment of enormous risk and opportunity. "They must be held," said Thane. "No reinforcements to the north wall. They must not retake the command center, and they must not leave the canyon until Dominus Arrower has control of the gravity weapon."
"We are well positioned for an artillery strike," General Imren voxed.
Thane shared her eagerness for retaliation on a massive scale. "Not yet," he said. "We need the weapon operational. Damage must be contained. We will neutralize their titans."
"Then we will deal with the rest."
"The battle will not be won on the floor of the rift," Thane told her.
The mortals should labor under no illusions. The orcs outnumbered and outgunned the regiments.
"The undertaking is clear to me, Chapter Master."
"Then the Emperor guide your hand, General."
"And yours."
Lucifer Blacks, Orion Watch, Jupiter Storm, Granite Myrmidons, Auroran Rifles, the battered and the bloody regiments of Terror stormed into the rift as if answering the first call to war. Battle horns sounded, challenging the orcs to turn and face their pursuers, announcing the arrival of Imperial vengeance. The Fist's exemplar tanks and assault squads took the lead, drawing the fire of the walkers to open the way for the regiments. The Rhinos carried the company. Thane rode in the upper hatch of his transport, watching for the moment to disembark. His target was the walker on the western side of the shattered wall. Its turrets and cannon arm fired, but their movement hesitated between a plethora of targets. The operators within the beast, distracted by the strafing of Xiphon interceptors and the arcing flight of Thamarius's assault squads. The shells hit. The ground exploded in flame, one beat behind the roaring troop carriers. The full strength of the Fist's exemplar drew that much closer to the colossal war machines.
"Now!" Thane voxed to the company. "Now! Now! Now!"
He leapt from the turret. The rear doors slammed open. The Fist's exemplar burst from the carriers. The walkers found their targets at close range. They fired. Thane ran through a holocaust of flame. Imren heard the world ending behind her. It had been ending all this long night. She had had enough. If the end had come for her and for the troops under her command, then it would come for an enemy too. To the rear was the cataclysm of super-heavy cannon fire. Before her was the inferno of the Horde. She expected to drown in the green tide, but by the throne she would go under with honor intact. Wind buffeted the canyon. The banners of the regiments and of the Imperium flapped. Their ragged state only made their pride the fiercer. They flew high, and they were saluted by the full-throated roar of armored fury. Lehman Russ battle cannons, Torox autocannons, Chimera multi-lasers and heavy bolters blasted the enemy infantry to shreds. Trucks and battle wagons exploded before they could turn. Rather than a walking barrage, Imren had ordered targets over a wide range as far as the tanks could fire with enough accuracy that they would not cause critical damage to the facility. Geysers of fire and shattered bodies erupted across the canyon-filling mob. Confusion and rage rippled out of the impacts. Columns of infantry charged into the orcs, stabbing with bayonets even as they burned with Laz. Thousands of men and women howled. Driven by repeated retreats, defeats, and the festering humiliation of the proletarian crusade, they were starved for revenge. In their anger, they were as savage as the orcs. No urging was needed from the commissars. Every trooper was on a personal vendetta. In the foe's chaotic response, Imren saw contradictory orders. The facility was under attack from the north, the south, and in the center. The threats were everywhere. The priority targets unclear.
"Choose us, Xenos filth!" Imren shouted at the burning knight. "We are your doom. We are the great danger to your machine."
As if they heard her over her cannons and their snarls, the orcs reversed course. The tidal wave came for the Astra Militarum. It boiled through the passages between conduits rising from the ground and the generators. It flowed around the columns of Imperial infantry. It rushed to all sides of the armor. Carried in the current, rocking as they ran over the slower brutes, the battle wagons rumbled forward, their guns firing with greater abandon the closer they came. Imren was yelling with her troops. Her throat was scraped raw. She could not hear herself over the ecstatic clamor of war. She could find no words for her rage. She gave herself over to the possession of fury. But her thoughts were clear. They were a prayer to the Emperor. As the vortex enveloped her, she thought again and again, "Let this have meaning. Let this have meaning. Let us have meaning." "No," said Alquist Arawa. Along the east edge of the Askia Rift, Skitari and Electro Priests paused in their tasks. "Physical connections must remain pending. Complete operations until that stage. Proceed no further until confirmation of the Primarch's success." He moved back from the cliff edge, tracing the web of cables running from the Orc energy coil to the Mechanicus assembly. The control mechanism was large. It had taken 4 heavy transport vehicles to haul its components to this position, and 3 others had carried the means of conjunction. Kilometers of meter-thick cable spread out from the assembly, reaching out to 4 of the coils. Each of the Orc structures was the height of a Warhound-class Titan. Each released enough excess energy to incinerate a division of infantry. The 4 Arua was going to tap into were only a fraction of the total number. He extrapolated that their interconnection through the larger system would make them act in concert once he had control. Whether seizing 4 would be enough was the question to be tested. He looked back at the coil and at the network of coruscating light in the depths of the canyon. The moment was extraordinary. His multiplicity of sensors struggled to keep up with a wave of data. To be this close to the Orc technology, to have the opportunity to put the theoretical work done on Mars during the war to work, to have access to the coveted machinery itself, was beyond price. The flood of data had an undertow. In the terms of the flesh, it was temptation. It invited Arua to submerge his consciousness in the study of the machine. If that was the final act of his being, and the data he processed made its way back to Mars, that would be a worthy form of worship of the Omnisire. Princeps Tynora VII Galliax moved into his field of view and recalled him to the necessities of the present. Her heavily armored form was more massive than Arawa's and more compact, its mechadendrites smaller and withdrawn within the armor's shell. Her form had been forged for war at the expense of almost all exploratory function. She was the reminder. The Mechanicus was at war. The Fabricator General had been explicit. The Orcs must be defeated. Terra must be saved. Data collection was a secondary priority. Courland was Lord Commander of the Imperium, and his orders were to be followed. 7 Galliax gazed over Arawa's shoulder at the assembled control machinery. "What is our probability of error?" she asked. "Considerable," said Arawa. The precise calculation changed moment to moment as he observed and evaluated the behavior of the installation. "Our mimicry of the Orc technology is approximate in its effects. In terms of power, greatly lacking. Interface between Xenos work and our own is a fraught procedure. Contamination and failure are inherent risks." He paused, looking over his shoulder to consider the progress of the work behind him. The assembly was complete. Its core was based on a teleporter control surrounded by giant capacitors and converters. It had no power source of its own. It would use that of the weapon itself when connected, as long as there was no countervailing force still functioning.
"What is the most favorable evaluation?"
"A crude form of control, and a brief one."
Even that, though, would be an immense victory. The data collected from that action alone could be the greatest achievement of the war this far. 7 Galliax nodded. She returned to the edge of the cliff. Below, battle raged. Energy flares mixed with the flashes of cannon fire and detonations and the burning streaks of Laz. Arawa's auditory receptors processed vast movement, analogous to clashing waves. The pulsations from the control nexus intensified. They became angry, their rhythm irregular. Deep geologic vibrations travelled up from the centre of the rift. Puffs of dust rose from the ground, the edge of the cliff crumbled. The great coil trembled, its crackling bursts lashing out like the strike of a serpent. "Stand by," Arawa commanded his forces. "The moment of action or of defeat approaches." He advanced towards the core of his control assembly. It was inert, but filled with gigantic potential. He settled into the throne, mechadendrites locking into place along its back and arms, fusing him with a machine. He observed the violent aurora of the canyon. He waited for its convulsions to reveal triumph or disaster. Up, down, up, down. The gravity fist turning Vulcan into the clapper of a bell, the impacts more and more ferocious. The Orc engineer showing no care for the integrity of the structure. The gigantic force turned to the single task of destroying one warrior. "This is still not enough," he thought. "The enemy fears you." The thought emerged from his deepest core. Beneath the battering pain, the constriction, and the confusion of the senses was the immovable, the implacable, and the calm. Vulcan pulled his consciousness down into his absolute center. There he had the patience and the resolution of mountains. He shut out damage and suffering. In the stony dark of that calm, he regained the coherence of his thoughts. "The enemy fears you. You are a threat. The assault grows more desperate. Desperation is weakness. Strike it." Not the clapper of a bell, then. He was the hammer against the anvil. His core turned molten. The calm of the mountain became the anger of the volcano.
Erupt.
His consciousness exploded back into the full awareness of his body and then transcended it. He observed his arc against the wall and saw not the wound inflicted, but the action he must take. And when the engineer hurled him to the floor again, he moved. He did not struggle against gravity. He acted in concert with it. He turned it into his own weapon. He punched forward with his left hand, hitting the floor, and drove his arm deep into the stone. He took root. He held Caldera. It held him back. When gravity reversed, he remained in place. The agony was a revelation. Forces sought to rip his body apart. He defied them. The Orc had ceased to laugh, and now it froze. It stared at him, hands hovering uncertainly over its controls. Tempered by the pain, guided by magmatic anger, Vulcan raised Doom Tremor. The hammer's wrath lit up the interior of the Nexus with a blaze of a sun. Thunderhead, Dawnbringer, weapons long lost, were present to his spirit in that which he now held aloft. Their terrible strength demanded Vulcan rise, and with a reversed gravity, but against its current, he threw the hammer. Its flight was true. A comet roared across the space between Vulcan and the pillar. It struck the platform. The impact released the energy of the throw, of the hammer, and of gravity itself. The explosion swallowed the top half of the pillar. The gravitic fist released him. He stood and marched through a vortex of howling, chaotic lightning to retrieve Doom Tremor. The pillar ended in a jagged stump. The control mechanism was gone, vaporized along with its master. Around Vulcan, surviving Orcs ran in panic as their great mechanism lost all direction. The ground heaved and cracked. Vulcan moved through a gathering storm. He picked up his hammer, braced his stance, and waited, fighting the instinct to destroy the abomination around him. If it did not find a new master within the next few moments, the storm would rip the planet open. The shaking built. Cracks became chasms. The world groaned. In the center of the rift, the energy discharges were maddened. Arawa's throne vibrated, presaging worse tremors to come. "Proceed," the Dominus commanded. The connections were made. He screamed. His larynx was no longer capable of such a sound. His vocalizations had long been purged of any trace of emotion, yet he screamed, emitting a wailing stream of binaric. His senses lit up with electric fire. He became a god, maddened by the pain of his own power. Duty to the Omnisire was his lodestone. His one focus was the coordinates of the Orc attack moon. In an act of prayer, he flexed his power, and he lifted a mountain.
"Admiral?"
The voice was distant. Rodolphe could barely hear it. His body was growing cold and numb. He was dying along with his ship. He had to keep his attention on the oculus, on the sight of the moon. If his mind drifted, if his will failed, all would be lost.
"Admiral!"
The voice was insistent. Then a hand shook his shoulder. The movement shot pain through his abdomen. He winced and looked away from the oculus. Groth was beside him. The bridge was filled with smoke, but his crew was still on station. The Finality was still fighting. It was still approaching the moon.
"What is it, Captain?"
he managed.
"Look, sir."
She pointed to the Orspec screen on his right. Rodolphe looked. The sensor array had picked up another mass rising from the planet towards the moon. Rodolphe blinked. The mass was coming far too fast. He grinned. The mass became visible through the oculus a few moments later. It had risen with such velocity it was heated to red by its passage through the atmosphere. It spun end over end, thousands of meters long, trillions of tons of rock, a missile hurled at the exposed heart of the Orc base. Rodolphe watched it disappear into the uncompleted face of the assault moon. It was small by comparison to the target, but so was a bullet fired into the body of a man. In the next instant, a fireball bloomed from the interior of the moon. It expanded far beyond the crescent edge, spreading until it was almost as wide as the moon. It was a sudden tumour, its uncontrollable growth killing the host. Fissures appeared across the partial globe. Fire leaked out of them. The moon was in agony.
"Finish it," Rodolphe said. "In the Emperor's name, finish it."
Much of the Orc fleet had broken away from the Finality and formed a blockade around the open face. It was vaporized in the explosion. The path was clear for the battleship to complete its run and launch its full armament into the glowing interior. Rodolphe's head cleared still further. He felt strength return to his body with a flush of victory. But not all the Orcs had left. Those who remained kept on the attack. When the torpedoes slammed into the stern, Rodolphe knew the worst before Groth told him. He felt the blow like a knife between his ribs.
"The warp drive," he said.
"Yes," Groth answered. "Breached."
"How long?"
She spoke into the ship's vox. Rodolphe was surprised there were any survivors left in the Engineerium to answer her. Groth looked at the oculus, then back at Rodolphe.
"Not long," she said, "but long enough."
Rodolphe nodded. They understood each other.
"Better than any ordnance," he said.
"A definitive blow. A fine victory, Admiral. Well fought."
"And you, Captain. And you."
"Signal the Mechanicus vessels," Groth called. "They should rejoin the Alcazar Remembered." "Helmsman," Groth called. "Take us in. For the Emperor."
The crew echoed her.
"For the Emperor!"
All batteries firing their last, marking the void with the purging light of the Imperial Navy's power, the Finality plunged through the remaining Orc vessels, completing its run, fulfilling its destiny. Rodolphe watched the open face of the moon reveal itself. He saw a honeycomb of madness, construction on a gargantuan scale, burning, shattered, pulsing with mortal fire. The Finality entered the maw of the wounded giant, warp reactors about to go critical. It travelled through an immensity of caves, natural and artificial, of hangar bays for entire armadas, bearing with it a son about to be born. Rodolphe gazed at what was about to be destroyed. The price he had paid for this vision seemed very little. When the end came in furious light, he was ecstatic. He had taken one action. He had struck one blow. The power was building, raging, a beast about to slip its tether. Adowar's grip on his omnipotence slipped. One more move, and then he must disengage. One more move, the one to bring an end to the power. The one Courland had ordered him to make, regardless of the situation in the canyon. Adowar had no knowledge of the war below now. He had no knowledge of anything, except the blinding absolute. So he took the action. The machine is all. Death to the blasphemy of the Xenos machine. Vulcan felt the change in the tremors. He felt how deep they went. He knew what was coming. No more waiting then. Culmination was at hand. Courland ducked beneath the orc dreadnought's swing. The thing's forearm was as long as he was tall, and it ended in a vice of revving killsaws. Another arm came in, lower on the same side. Courland stepped in closer, avoiding the saws, but not the blow itself. It knocked him to the right, into the grasp of the two right arms. The claws seized him. The saws dug into his armour. He maglocked his bolter and with his free hand took a crack grenade from his belt, throwing it at the dreadnought's viewing slit. The explosive attached itself to the metal and went off, damaging the orc's shell. It did not eat all the way through the armour, but the flash of its detonation stunned the green skin wired into the mechanism. It flinched, and so did its mechanical limbs. Their grip loosened. Courland pulled himself free. The gouges in his left flank went through his armour all the way down to the bone. He jumped forward before the dreadnought could react, grabbing the top of the huge head, then hauled himself up and plunged his chainsword through the viewing slit. The blade vibrated as it cut through the body inside. Animal screams of pain turned into gurgles. Blood sprayed out of the slit, drenching Courland's chestplate. The war machine's arms dropped. It stumbled forward, then stopped, inert. Courland dropped to the ground, grabbed his bolter and sprayed shells in a long burst, felling the greenskins that closed with him. To his right, another orc dreadnought had pinned Eternity to the ground. Its shoulder-mounted guns pummeled the veteran. The kill saws dug into him. Daylight was fighting to reach him, but the third dreadnought launched two rockets at him. The blasts took out the orc surrounding him and sent him flying. Absolution led three other battle brothers against the dreadnought. Their relentless bolt of fire and washes of flamer held it at bay. But Eternity was dying. Courland ran, chainsword forward, bolt shell scything his path towards Eternity. As he did, the earth tremors became violent. He managed to keep his feet, but many of the orcs were knocked down as the ground bucked, an animal convulsing in pain. Courland moved in awkward leaps, trusting the air instead of the surface, landing with hard stamps to keep his balance, putting more faith in luck than in the earth to be where he expected. He closed with the dreadnought. Its mass was so great, its centre of gravity so low, that it was remaining stable through the tremors. It held Eternity fast with two of its arms and was cutting deep with the other two. Eternity's rune was flickering between amber and red in Corlin's retinal lens.
"Brother!" Corlin called to him. "Finish it fast!"
Eternity shouted, his voice tight with struggle and agony. A crevasse burst open to Corlin's left. The earth rose and fell in waves. Echoes of Ardamantua pursued him. The land in chaotic movement, the enemy overwhelming, the death of brothers looming. But this was not Ardamantua, this was Caldera, and the orcs were roaring in dismay as the planet turned against them. The quakes were not a mystery and the prologue to defeat by a power beyond his ability to grasp. The tremors were the work of the Imperium. They were the sign of victory. And Courland flew over the land, propelled by the furious energy of vengeance. His shells struck the armour of the dreadnought, not hard enough to punch through, but hard enough to draw the pilot's attention. It held Eternity with its left limbs and turned to meet Corland's charge, guns blazing. Corland ran into the fire. He exchanged his chainsword for a melter bomb and ran through the snarling embrace of the arms, colliding with the dreadnought. It was like running into a tank, though his mass and momentum were enough to rock the monster back a step. He slapped the melter bomb against the dreadnought's flank, then he threw himself back and over Eternity's prone figure, shielding him. The shaped charge ate through the orc monster. It melted iron and conduits and the flesh inside. At this proximity, the heat flash seared off the top layers of Corlin's armor. His power pack fought to compensate, readouts red lining in his lenses. The temperature inside his armor was enough to roast flesh. The dreadnought's ammunition cooked off, and the war beast blew apart. Shrapnel embedded itself in Corlin's back and arms. He rose, servo motors catching and whining. His armor was heavy and sluggish. He fought to keep moving. The tremors were still growing in intensity. There was not much time. Eternity had lost his left leg below the knee. Corland helped him stand. The wounded space marine took his chain axe from his back and used the shaft as a cane while Corland held his shoulder. The dreadnought's explosion had cleared some space for them.
"Time to go, I think,"
Eternity rasped. "Yes." Across the command network, Corland sent the order. "To all Imperial forces, the enemy's defeat is at hand. Withdraw from the rift, but keep the orcs contained." Switching to the squad channels, he said, "To the tunnels, brothers! To the tunnels!" The brothers of the last wall fought their way back through the cauldron of orcs, staggering up the slope. The land was a sea in storm. Chunks of the cliffs were falling onto the battlefield. Corland found he had to put his faith in the orcs. He had to hope they had built their wall strong enough to withstand the storm. "Take the ground from under them," Thane ordered. The armor of the orc walkers had withstood the fire of the predators and the missiles of the gunships. The huge skirts of the behemoths were smoking and cratered, but so dense they still had not collapsed to expose the interior. The orcs had destroyed two of the Fist's exemplar tanks. The Imperial armor was faster and more maneuverable than the greenskin machines, and they stayed close to the enemy, forcing the orcs to risk their own destruction in the firing of the huge guns. But when the orcs moved back, all it took was a single step, a lucky swing of the arm, and the tanks were exposed. The earthquakes had begun. They were building. Remaining upright was difficult. Thane would make it even more so for the walkers. Most of the greenskin infantry was held further into the valley in the battle with Imren's regiments. The Fist's exemplar destroyed the foot soldiers who had made it this far. Thane sent half the company down slope to hold back the rest. But the walkers were the problem. They needed to be stopped. And as the tremors presaged great events to come, a barrier was needed. The tanks lowered their guns. They blasted the land at the walkers' feet. The shells dug deep depressions in the already wounded land. New fissures opened, joined, and spread in webs. The ground heaved, the ground plunged, and Corlin's order came. "Acknowledged," Thane said. He waited to hear the same from Imran. There was only silence from the general. The walkers' steps slowed, then stopped. They stood their ground, immensity holding them in place, while their gigantic arm turrets moved with jerking urgency, their shots coming faster but more erratic.
"Chapter Master!"
Aloysian called on the feed. He and the rest of Thane's squad were between the two walkers. The Tech Marine pointed to the western monster. A third of the way up the hull, a shell impact had destroyed a gun emplacement and peeled back the piston-raised shutters that protected it.
"I see it."
The actual opening was small, the angle unpromising, but it was an opportunity. He eyed the overlapping shields. Their edges would serve.
"With me, Brother Aloysian."
They climbed. The rest of the squad provided covering fire as the other shutters opened and the orcs rained shots down on the intruders. Aloysian took the lead, climbing faster with his servo arms. He and Thane took shots, but there was no evasion to take. It was all Thane could do to hold onto the ledges as the iron wall he climbed rocked and swayed, the operators of the walker struggling to compensate for the upheavals of the tremors. Higher. Gravity and violent motion tried to throw them to the ground. Slugs slammed into their armor, striking at their gauntlets. Higher. The shattered gun came within reach. Smoke poured from the rent. With less than 2 meters to go, a pair of orcs appeared in the gap. They turned their shotguns on Thane and Aloysian. The Tech Marine responded with his plasma cutter, firing the jet into the brutish faces, burning them off their skulls. The greenskins fell back, and Aloysian climbed in after them. Thane followed. There was no time for strategy. Corlan's warning was almost a minute in the past. Thane charged through the narrow passageway leading from the wrecked gun. It led to a network of catwalks and compartments surrounding a shaft where immense pistons and gears formed the mobile skeleton of the walker's leg. While Aloysian cut cables and breached conduits, Thane hurled crack grenades into the shaft above and below their position. He exhausted his supply and sprayed bursts of shells in all directions. Smaller greenskins panicked. Larger ones died trying to attack. Mass reactive shells blew apart the supports on the catwalks and they fell into the shaft, tangling gears. The grenades went off. The damage spread. The machine shook within and without. The floor tilted. "Out!" said Thane. The raid had taken 30 seconds. They ran back to the gun emplacement. They climbed out of the gap, the slope of the walker's skirt now near vertical. The walker was listing, one leg paralyzed, its motion becoming erratic. The behemoth was unstable and it was still firing. Thane and Aloysian dropped down its side, slowing their fall with quick grabs at ledges for as long as they could, then leaping the last several meters. They landed on ground whose movement was as violent as the walker's. "Pull back," Thane ordered. "Out of the rift. Suppressive fire on any enemy who follow." He tried to raise Imran, and this time she answered. "General," he said, "there is no more time."
"I agree, Chapter Master." She sounded injured. "There is no time. We will hold the enemy. Preserve our memory on terror."
Thane grimaced at the scale of the sacrifice.
"It will be celebrated," he said.
"Thank you."
She signed off. The predators had ceased firing. They had shattered the land, and the walkers could not move forward without stepping into depressions that would overbalance them. The tanks now moved upslope. The pass between the volcanoes seemed desperately narrow from Thane's position. The peaks thundered, and the clouds around them turned crimson. The eruptions had begun. The Fist Exemplar charged between the walkers. The orc machines fired their cannons and fired again, but the tremors were too powerful. The shells went wild, striking cliffs and mountainsides. The western walker lurched. Internal blasts beat against its interior. Thane and Aloysian stood between the two beasts until the rest of the company had passed through, then they followed. The wounded walker tried to walk. The tremors, broken land, and the damage made the error a fatal one. The walker began to fall towards its mate. Titanic metal walls closed together over Thane's head. A war mountain fell upon another. The monsters collided, their limbs entangled. With grinding blasts aloft, Titan fused with Titan. Thane and Aloysian passed from beneath their shadow, racing over the bucking, groaning earth for the waiting rhino. The transport ground forward as the hatch slammed shut. Thane climbed through the roof turret to look back. He saw the final act of desperation, anger, and madness. He saw the great cannons fire again. The guns had no valid targets. They were aimed downward and too close to each other. The walker to the west blew up the lower reaches of the other's armor. The eastern one created a new crater before both colossi. It turned into a widening chasm. The walkers fell forward, lodging in the gap, riven by blasts. The guns, their barrels now aiming beneath the surface, boomed again. But this time, Thane knew he was hearing the start of a chain reaction, the weaponry of the monsters consuming itself in uncontrolled detonations. The walkers turned into metal volcanoes, a blazing wall of ruin across the southern access to the Askia Rift, containing orcs and humans alike, inside the doomed installation. The Thunderhawks kept pace with a convoy of predators and rhinos overhead. Their guns were silent. Their role now was to rescue Battle Brothers from any vehicles that fell into the multiplying fissures. The tremors shook the rhino. Thane held tight to the turret to avoid being thrown free. On either side, the mountains raged. Rock slides roared down the faces. Lava followed, blood drawn from the night. Behind, in the pass, he watched the orc structures waver and fall, collapsing in a growing sea of flame. And then came the immense crack of terminal rending. It was a sharp retort, but so deep and vast it drowned all other sound of war and destruction. It was the sound of the Askia Rift opening wide its maw. A terrible dawn broke, incandescent red, the sun rising from the center of the canyon. The rift parted. The great wound began in the center, meters wide, then tens of meters, then hundreds. It swallowed the ruins of the command nexus. It stretched its reach longer and longer, expanding to half the length of the canyon. From it came the lava in a tide, a flood, a wall, a sea of molten rock rose to fill the rift. It rose to swallow armies. Imren saw it, and she smiled. She stood on her chimera, bleeding out from a gut shot. Nissan was dead, burned when an orc rocket took out the treads in front of the hull. She was dying, but she was standing, and she was firing her plasma pistol at the enemy, and she had lived to see the victory. And so she smiled. The victory was staggering to behold. She and her troops would become part of a legend, and that was glorious. Her soul was staggered by the sight. A lava wall 30 meters high swept toward her, and the sight was greater in her perception than the devouring heat that came before it. The orcs in their tens of thousands, their tanks and their transports, their weapons and all their works, disappeared in the wall. They were silhouettes of defeat, of fleeing despair, and then they were gone. The wave was almost upon her. It took her troops. The heat set her hair alight. The light of the world's anger blinded her, and there was pain, inconceivable pain. But greater than everything was the victory. Her troops celebrated as they died, and her final thoughts were of exultation. A worthy end. Honor is restored. Corland brought up the rear in the tunnel. He supported Eternity. He fired, killing the fleeing orcs, denying them the last of a faint hope. The sides of the tunnel glowed with heat. The joints of Corland's armor kept locking. He was dragging it almost as much as he was Eternity. But behind came the searing light of Caldera's vengeance, spurring him on. The wall was endless. The heat was swift and merciless. The lava flowed up the slope, devouring the horde, and then Courland turned away. There was nothing but the killing brilliance behind him. He staggered into the night, seconds ahead of the deluge. The Honor's spear was on the ground, rear hatch down, engines rumbling and eager for flight.
A good night's work,
Eternity slurred, barely conscious.
A great dawn, Courland answered.
He lurched up the ramp with his burden and collapsed onto a bench with his brother. The hatch closed, and the Thunderhawk leapt for the skies. Corland looked through the viewing block. Lava shot out of the tunnel, a glowing finger emerging from the wall. Moments later, the barrier failed. It had been strong enough to keep its builders trapped inside. Now it melted in the embrace of the lava flow. The mountainous landscape filled with incinerating light.
And the Primarch?
Eternity asked.
What of Vulcan?
I have faith, Corland answered.
They had returned to Torrens, as the Protector of Caldera had commanded. There was little of the mining settlement that remained. It was a location with a name and some ruins, in which could be traced the fractured memories of a wall, of habitations, an echo of streets. But Lord Vulcan had commanded that they return, and so they had, the mere handful who had survived. And now, standing where their rampart had been, they looked north and saw the wrathful birth of day. The glare of the lava flow spilled out from between the silhouettes of the twin volcanoes.
"Will it reach this far?"
Carla asked. The question had been on Becca's lips, too. He didn't know.
"If it does," said a voice deep as stone, "you will depart ahead of it and begin anew. You know this danger. To be tempered on its anvil is your blessing as Calderons."
Mesmerized by the flood, they had not seen Vulcan approach. He was before them now, a giant in the growing light.
"I once brought a deluge of flame to this planet," he said. "It was a necessary destruction, and from the ashes of what had been before, Caldera was born. I then made a covenant with this world. I made no promise that I would not bring a burning flood again, but I swore to fight for Caldera."
He raised his arm and pointed with his hammer towards the lava.
"Thus have I kept my oath. So will I, ever."
He gazed down on the people of Torrens. His eyes were as fierce as the lava flow, Becca thought, but they were also kind.
"You have made me proud," Vulcan said. "You have fought well. Keep faith with Caldera, as I do."
"We shall," Becca said. "We swear it," said Carla.
"We swear it."
One voice, all the voices. Vulcan nodded.
"Then I am satisfied."